Welcome back, everyone, to HTO Football. We're still on the road to Qatar 2022, but the road's getting shorter. It's less of a long motorway, more of a country lane, because we're nearly there. We're finding ourselves in 2006, FIFA World Cup, Germany. I am, as ever, joined by my co-host, Andrew. We're also joined by another special guest today, Jack Wills, esteemed football writer. We're going to throw it to Jack in a short while. But Andrew, I guess I'll throw it to you 2006 for memories before we throw it to Jack. One that kind of slipped from the memory bank, but we've sort of unearthed a cracking World Cup here.
Yeah, I think, you know, as cynical football fans in our 30s, the 90s was obviously the decade for football, and we're well out of that now. So we tend to sort of forget this, really, when we're having our trips down memory lane. But I've just watched a sort of 20-minute overview, and I've got to apologise to FIFA, the organisers, because they put on such a cracking World Cup. I forgot how good it was. So I'm looking forward to our chat today with Jack.
I reckon we'll get our envelope full of cash for those comments and positive comments, particularly ahead of a Qatar World Cup. And no, I think you're right. I think there's a black hole of 10 years, but it might have coincided with the fact that Arsenal just weren't very good. But anyway, we are joined by our esteemed football writer guest, Mr. Anonymous Dingo himself. Jack, how you doing?
Great, thank you. Great. Happy to be on this.
Well, welcome aboard. Welcome aboard. We always say that, look, we're going to dive into some more specific questions and sort of unearth those memories between the three of us. But I guess, what were your abiding memories of the World Cup? Where were you physically, but in life? Like, you know, were you a young lad watching it? Were you in work? You know, just what were your memories of the time?
So I was 10 years old. I was just going into primary seven, so the end of my early years at school. And yeah, I feel, as is probably a theme in these kind of conversations, it was my first World Cup. 98, I was probably learning to use the big boy toilet. And 2002, my abiding memory is walking in front of the TV during the final to ask my brother for help playing Crash Bandicoot. Wasn't really a big football guy back then. So 10 years old, 2006, that was when I really just...
Yeah, you're right. It's always that age, you know, between 6 and 12, and it will depend where it falls for different people, but they actually properly, you know, you have your first World Cup. And Andrew and I reflected that although USA 94 could have been our first one because we'd have been like six, two things. First of all, we were probably a little bit too young, and secondly, England weren't in it, so there was probably not the same momentum that it sticks out, maybe like a Euro 96 sticks out for us. So for us, France 98, also being sort of 10, 11 years old, that's my first World Cup proper. And so, yeah, so good times. So memories of the tournament then, did you remember being enthralled by it, or have you sort of learned to love it over the years?
I was captivated. I watched every minute that I could. Obviously, there were a few earlier kickoffs that school I couldn't quite talk my way out of. but yeah, I mean, I remember from that first Philip Lahm goal pretty much all the way to the Grosso penalty to win it at the end. It was just, I was enthralled. I mean, even the games that I wasn't able to watch because of school and life, I went back, I watched highlights that night. And I mean, I've still got a DVD that I watch probably a little bit too often about all the goals to the World Cup. So it's, yeah, it's just like a little cult of mine as such. It's
and it's a fairly strong World Cup for goals, isn't it? Sort of 2.3 a match, 147 in total. We've commentated and reviewed less, haven't we, Andrew? But we've also sort of seen a couple more. But it looking back over your review, there were some big games and crackers, even though never really got off the ground for England, did it?
No, I think this is probably a World Cup, particularly the group stage and last round of 16, that there's not much to talk about in general, really. The Sweden game was a little bit dramatic. Obviously, Joe Cole's goal was a cracking strike there that we can sort of touch on later. But in general, I'm sort of touching 16, 17 at the time in secondary school, latter end of secondary school. So I was probably trying to get out early of a PE lesson or something to get back for the early games. But I remember having to get back for all of the 5 o'clock ones for sure. But it kicks off in great style, right? If we want to start off right at the beginning, yeah. The opening game. I mean, Germany, Costa Rica 4-2, a couple of real worldy goals in there from Germany. What I noticed is, doing a little bit of a research before this, just to kind of refresh my memory of the whole World Cup in general, is every single goal is just celebrated with so much passion. It's just that's what really. I mean, obviously, that's probably in every World Cup. It's just that, as because I watched every goal of this tournament back to back, it was like that really stuck out to me, that, you know, the World Cup, for how much we're loving club football at the moment as Arsenal fans, but international football at a World Cup level, you know, every single goal is just, it means so much, doesn't it, to the players and fans.
It does, and I think my memories of it as a fan and were hazy, but I just do remember this was the tournament of our golden generation that should have been carrying us through. We had the perfect back four, you know, we had the Ferdinand Terry partnership, Ashley Cole, but, you know, we obviously had the trio in midfield as well that should have been taking us to glory. You know, your Gerrard, Lampard, Beckhams, and of course, following Euro heroics, we had the exciting Rooney, I think carried a little bit, not coming in, but was fit by a third game in the group. And I remember a lot of expectation and it never quite getting off the ground. And I think for me, that's probably why I sort of lament it a little bit looking back, because for us, in, you know, even in the group stage, I know we topped the group, but yeah, quite drab performances. There's no, what I mean by that is that if you look at 2002, we had the highs. And I don't get me wrong, it's Argentina beating Argentina 1-0 in the group stage, and then we go and beat Denmark quite comfortably 3-0 in that first knockout round. So you're excited, or there are normally a couple of thrashings somewhere. You know, look at the World Cup run in 2018, which obviously we've not reviewed yet, but we go and smash Panama like by a fair few. Whereas we never really do that in this tournament. So for me as an England supporter, clearly, it was just a bit meh.
Yeah, I'd probably just to add to that, I mean, because then we can probably wrap up the England piece, quite a short one, because we do go out in the quarterfinals. But I do feel, though, to add to that, that we went out. I didn't think we went out on a whimper against Portugal, though. It was almost like we were really underwhelming in the group stage, really underwhelming. I mean, I think it was Trinidad. Paraguay?
Sweden draw.
Paraguay
win, yeah.
Really, really, we made hard work of that group. And then in the second round, obviously, Ecuador 1-0, really awful match. But actually, against Portugal, going down to 10 men, which, you know, the whole famous wink drama there, we actually went out on our shield, I thought. Hargreaves, I remember, playing incredibly well in that match. And we actually deserved to, I thought, to go through even with 10 men against Portugal. But apart from that, yeah, it was pretty drab.
Do you think it was perhaps an overconfidence thing? I mean, the teams you're playing in the group, perhaps Sweden aside, not the biggest football names. And then if you've got a bunch of superstars, maybe it takes that Portugal game to kind of lift themselves. Maybe.
Yeah, possibly, Jack. Yeah. I mean, looking back, that might be the case. I mean, I always felt in that period of England football that when we had Sven as well, and I think we carried this on even till Capello really a bit later on, we did go through a spell where we just could not get it right, and that the dynamic was just not right, and the players were there on paper, but the pressure of wearing that badge on the shirt as well, I think that team was having to live with the kind of Italia 90, you know, the Euro 96. And I think that we had a group of players that had the ability, but there was the dynamic and the environment just wasn't around them for them to sort of succeed, really.
For me, it felt like we never, ever were a team. We were a collection of superstars at club level who were big. And I know the Lampard, Gerrard, Paul Scholes thing for 4, 5, 6 years in the early 2000s was always a talking shop. But it's true, rather than just say, do you know what, we're going to drop one and have a team and have a proper right wing or a left winger, we'd end up playing one of them left, and it just or Joe Cole, and it just never quite worked. I don't think we ever, and I know it's a horrible Arsenal phrase that people will know from an Arsene Wenger era, I don't think we ever took the handbrake off and just sort of went for teams and just enjoyed our football. You know, when you watch England in this World Cup, it doesn't really look like we're enjoying our football. You know, celebrations aside, you know, we're not playing with a carefree abandonment, and you could potentially argue that's a similar case to England in the last couple of World Cups.
I mean, what I'd say on that as well, Tom, is, you know, think Sven-Goran Eriksson, Fabio Capello, like we changed our approach. You know, we'd gone from Venables, Hoddle, two very respected English coaches, but then we went for this kind of real A-list managerial appointments where let's look overseas, they're going to bring and the football led.
Success. If you look at Venables, you know, Venables but, to an extent Hoddle.
But at international level, you know, as we've seen down the years with teams that go on to win these tournaments, you don't need a elite name manager to win these things, you know. So yeah, that's probably...
like you said though, that was kind of England's World Cup. However, other teams were faring better. You alluded to earlier, Andrew, offline that early in the group stage, round of 16, Argentina looking flying, and it's just worth commenting on them and maybe the France sort of revival before we move on properly to the quarterfinals, because I feel like, unlike 2002, quarterfinals, bar probably Ukraine, to be fair to them, they're all quite heavy hitting teams in there. You know, it feels like a proper World Cup.
Mm.
But yeah, any other reflections on the early stages?
I thought I said to you off air, I mean, I thought, Jack, that going into the knockout rounds, it was Argentina's tournament to lose, in my opinion.
Yeah, they were scintillating. I mean, not just, I know they had the Serbian-Montenegro game where they just dominated for 90 minutes, and that Cambiaso goal, I'm sure we'll come around to talking to you later, but that was a tough group. The Netherlands, guys like Robin van Persie, it was a young team, but they had some quality. Ivory Coast for their debut tournament. Yeah, again, some good players in that. So they came through a tough group. And yeah, I guess when it came to it, they were a couple of penalties away from progressing. And who knows, that Germany side as well, they built into that tournament. They had the home crowd behind them. It was incredible. Italy were actually, for eventual champions, they were fine, they were good, but they just did what you have to do in tournaments, and they just won.
Quite similar to the Euros win of late, you know. And I think France as well, obviously going on and getting to the final, after spectacular failure in 2002 when they came into the World Cup, heavy favourites to go and win it after the 98 and World Cup win and to Euro 2000 and win as well. You know, they grew into the tournament, didn't have a fan scintillating group stage. They had, I think a couple of players come out of international tournament. It's almost like the old guard getting back together for one last hurrah. And it nearly carries them all the way, doesn't it?
Yeah, so they were really interesting. I remember watching all their group games, and it was painful. It was genuinely just like, how is this France? They just could not get going. I think Zidane and Vieira, potentially one or two more, like you said, came out of retirement, and they just looked like a team of guys that had been like retired from football, not just international. They just could not get going. But they were blessed, I guess, with having an easy-ish group. I know Switzerland were very good in qualifiers, and they put in a good shift in that tournament. But South Korea, not quite the force they were in 2002, and Togo, some of their issues going into that tournament, it was diabolical. For such a joyful experience of getting to a World Cup, I believe they threatened strikes, they threatened to not play, they'd be forced by FIFA into even playing. So I think luckily they faced them at the end, got over the line. I think it was Vieira that got the goal potentially that took them through.
Mm.
And as soon as they hit the knockouts, played that just exciting Spain team.
Came alive against Spain, didn't they, France? 1-3-1, I think, going down, but in that game, but then, turning on a bit. Two of that old guard, like you said, Vieira and Zidane netting there.
Spain looked very good in the group stages as well, scoring a lot of goals. So that was a really important, I think, was like as Jack was mentioned there about, you know, they looked like a team coming out of retirement. I think their limbs were starting to warm up at that point.
Exactly. Just getting loose after a couple of like stretches, you know. I think Turan was another one who came out of retirement. And just to play the tournament getting going.
McAlealy or?
Quite possibly. Mm-hmm. I mean, I feel like they all came back and suddenly like they were there. you know, Henry was still tail end of his career, but he wasn't one of these old guard who'd probably just finished up. But it set up that mouth-watering quarterfinal, didn't it? Sort of a huge game, repeat of the 98 World Cup final, Brazil and France. That was an edgy affair.
Wow, that game, that broke me. So 10 years old, I had barely gotten into club football. I just attached myself to two teams in that tournament. Obviously, Scottish didn't quite make it. And I backed Brazil was the heavy favourites, and I backed Trinidad and Tobago as the plucky underdogs.
As your fan,
Yeah, didn't even get to say my piece earlier, actually, about the travesty that was that Peter Crouch goal against Trinidad and Tobago where he grabbed the guy's dreadlocks. But sorry, I digress. Brazil, first ever football talk was Brazil, Ronaldinho 10. I had Kaká that I just fall in love with after the Champions League, guys like Ronaldo. I backed that team to the hilt. I fell in love with Brazil. Weren't tremendous in that tournament. They were fine. They were getting the job done. But I remember just being heartbroken when Henry got that goal against them. And fair play, they were the better team. They deserved to win France. But yeah, that was probably my first ever taste of real bitter disappointment as a football fan.
Well, actually, it's similar to France in a way that this was an aging Brazil side. As well, you know, you've got people like Cafu and Roberto Carlos, Ronaldo, obviously, Lucio, Dida. Like this was an aging Brazilian side as well as France. But yeah, I mean, that Omri sends them through.
You're right there. So sort of like to be honest with you, the two superpowers of the last 12 years in World Cup football, because you had the Brazil, obviously 94 winners, France 98 winners. Brazil 2002 winners. They'd swapped, they'd shared. And had France gone on and actually won this final, you'd be talking about the last four World Cups just being shared between two nations. So it actually was a clash at the point of all players who'd been there and done it, winners of the last two World Cups. Brazil clearly the winners of the one before as well, although there wouldn't have been anyone playing in the same one. You know, so it was a clash of teams that wouldn't then really figure in the next couple, if that makes sense. Do you know what I mean? So you know, obviously then Spain go on and have their period of dominance and stuff like that. So this was almost like a last chance.
Yeah, the old
at least guard. At least for a generation anyway, of someone else coming along and winning it. So yeah, it's a huge game, but potentially neither side, obviously at the peak of the powers that they'd enjoyed for two World Cups previously.
And then you've got, we've spoken about the England-Portugal game, sort of touched on that. Italy dispatched Ukraine 3-0 quite comfortably, but the other tie of the round is definitely obviously the Germany-Argentina match, finishes 1-1, goes on to penalties. Argentina going to that game, absolutely flying. Germany looked solid as well. And as you mentioned earlier, Jack, sort of Germany do what Germany do, right? They manage to do what's necessary, regardless of who they're playing and what their form is like sometimes as well in major tournaments. They've got that nous, haven't they? And Argentina, I mean, we talk about Real Madrid being the Galacticos. I mean, that was a Galacticos of an international side, wasn't it? I mean, there was even people like Tevez coming off the bench, a young Messi, his first ever World Cup, as was Ronaldo as well. So an interesting World Cup. And we'll talk about legacy later. But those are two names that we obviously know quite well now. So, and Argentina get knocked out, like just all out of nowhere, the favourites are gone.
And they take it with grace and decorum as well. So, four people sent off after the final whistle on that punch-up. I don't know what hit harder, Tarsen Fring's goal in the opening game or his punch in that post-shootout.
I think Germany equalised quite late on in that quarter, don't they?
Very late.
You know,
added time? No, not added time. Closer, I think, gets it.
Yeah, I remember. I can't remember how late, but it felt late. And obviously, then it goes on to extra time and penalties. And as ever, Germany, efficient in penalties. I think dispatched quite comfortably in the penalty shootout, if memory serves. So, yeah, that was obviously another huge game there. If you're looking at quarterfinals, they don't get much bigger really than Brazil, France, and Germany, Argentina for a World Cup quarterfinals. Those are pretty.
That could be a semis, couldn't it? Really,
that could be a semis. It could, and either could be final, especially when you're talking European superpower versus South American superpower, which, let's be honest, dominated World Cup history. You know, you're one of the two if you're winning the World Cup, basically, because no one else has. So yeah, and then we move on to the semi-finals again. One of them is a classic World Cup matchup, isn't it? Germany, Italy, again,
two European superpowers.
Yeah, two immovable objects. Doesn't surprise anyone that it takes extra time to get rid of the game. And Portugal, France, again, at this point, Portugal obviously hadn't won their Euros that they go on to win some 10 years later or whatever it is. So they're perennial, not quite there, and France get another 1-0 win. But maybe reflections on that superpower semi, Germany, Italy, if anyone remembers that one.
That will hopefully never ever leave my brain. That game was something else. I remember my brother again getting quite frustrated because I think it was Sports Direct or something used to sell these gigantic flags. I remember Italy scored. I picked one up that we had lying about, just dancing about the living room holding this Italy flag when the first goal went in. Doing it for so long that I actually blocked the screen, so he never saw the second goal. Well, I mean, what an event to.
It was quick. The second one was quickly after the first, wasn't it? It was like literally like a minute later or something like that.
Yeah, I think Germany were on their knees, weren't they?
On their knees by that point.
There's a particular celebration of that that I just absolutely love, which we'll touch on later, maybe in the celebration category. But yeah, I mean, a very dramatic final in a night game, I think it was. Portugal, France. Yeah, not much to say about that. I remember it being quite boring after the Zidane penalty. And then on to the final.
Yeah, I was just about to allude to the fact, just you can't help it, but Arsenal bias of that Germany team, sort of three Arsenal players in that starting 11, just looking, never together at the same time, but your Lehmann there, Mertesacker and Podolski. So a young Podolski making his mark on a world stage for the first time.
Podolski's still scoring goals from his own half.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that goal, a couple of nights ago, yeah, last night, unbelievable strike. Yeah, I mean, we never liked to dwell, but Germany go on and win the third place playoff. But as ever, should they even happen? Who knows? Who cares? The World Cup final, though, let's be honest, it is iconic for one reason and one reason only. You know, Jack, you said that this tournament sucks you into the world of football properly. It's your first World Cup. You don't get much bigger moments than one of the best players ever. At that point, certainly the best player of the last 10 years, because we are pre Lionel Messi and Cristiano Ronaldo here. You know, we are, you know, Zidane has cast a shadow over the footballing world for the last 10 odd years, you know, scoring two World Cup goals in the World Cup final, for it to win it in his own country. You've got the phenomenal, famous Champions League 2002 against Leverkusen volley to win the Champions League. You're talking about probably one of the best players in history. And he does that. And it's his last moment on the world stage. So you, 10-year-old Jack, what are your memories of this game?
I've got this history of picking the wrong team in finals. I was back in France, having got over the Brazil heartbreak. I remember the absolute swagger of Zidane to chip that penalty down the middle to beat Buffon off the bar and in. It was an exciting game. I remember, extra time seemed fair. I think both teams had just had a good go of things, like being spectacular, like classic cliche. It was a bit cagey. But yeah, that thing, the headbutt, that was insane. I mean, what can you say about that? It's not just a World Cup final, it's a big player, but yeah, pretty arguably the best player of the last decades in his final match, minutes away from a penalty shootout where he is the team's undisputed penalty taker as well.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, you've heard the speculation of what Marco Materazzi said. I don't know what's been come out as factual, what's still rumor, but I can see the anger, but God, that was just ludicrous in a moment like that.
Yeah, and you're right, and I think that on the one hand, does it directly cost them the game of the World Cup? Well, no, because it's 10 minutes away and they go to a penalty shootout, but you are talking about a person, let's be honest, was not only their bona fide penalty taker, but who had dispatched penalties in the last couple of rounds. He dispatched a pen in the final itself to score for France, and also done so in the semi. So we're talking about a man who best player on the planet for the last 10 years, probably converts a penalty if he stays into the shootout. And you don't know how that then impacts the result. I mean, Italy go perfect, 5-for-5 penalties, a bit like the Germans, like you just don't want to play Italy in a penalty shootout, as England have found out in the last international tournament. But yeah, that's a huge moment, isn't it, Andrew? What do you remember of that?
Yeah, I remember watching it live, and I remember, you know, the really audacious chip just to kick off the final in the opening minutes. I think Materazzi, funnily enough, equalises, which maybe adds to his little bit of confidence later on when he's in Zidane's ear. I literally remember something. I think it might have been John Motson at the time, and the camera goes over, and all of a sudden, the referees brandishing a red card and Zidane's walking off the pitch without even having a word with him. So you knew straight away something had been done. But just to go on to in terms of that extra time, though, France makes some really big substitutions. Just looking back now at the subs they make, Zidane would have taken a penalty. Henry comes off in extra time for Wiltord. Two penalty takers nailed on, surely, if they go to a penalty shootout, France. Ribéry comes off in extra time. And so all of a sudden, France going to that penalty shootout with their takers are Wiltord, Trezeguet, who misses, Abidal, and Sagnol.
Well, I was just about to say, I mean, the irony is that Abidal and Sagnol do convert, but Trezeguet misses against the peerless Italian penalties. What that headbutt as well, though, what's crazy for me is that we see players get sent off for headbutts, but normally, let's be honest, they're not headbutts. They're sort of shoves with the head. Yeah. Whereas this is a headbutt, isn't it? Let's be honest. This is a proper headbutt. You'd see it in a brawl somewhere. For a player of that distinction to go out like that, and like you said, France's prospects then turn on their head. Their two biggest players now off the pitch. Henri taken off, who had probably been the best player in Europe over the last 3 or 4 years. And their top scorer in the tournament, again, I believe, or shared with Zidane 3 goals. And Zidane, their linchpin, you know, their talisman, off with the red card. So, I mean, going into that penalty shootout, Italy probably rightly favourites, and then they go on and convert in typical fashion. I think it does go to show the size and the career that Zidane has, that it in no way overshadows the career. Like, let's be honest, Zidane's, you know, still known for everything else he did, but it is such a huge World Cup moment. It's probably up there for me with sort of like the Baggio penalty miss.
Yeah.
In terms of just individual moments, I can't think of many over the last 5-6 World Cups. You know, I wasn't, you know, around for the Maradona hand of God. It's kind of one of those moments where we're not just talking about a great team, we're talking about an individual moment, and it's one of those that stand out. If you did a 10 biggest World Cup moments in history, which maybe we could look at, Tim, bit of a pod there, it's probably in there, isn't it?
Yeah, 100%. I think as well, there's different shades of what greatness looks like, and you know, Maradona is a great for his, you know, his extremities on and off the pitch in different ways.
Right.
Zidane as well. You know, Pele is a lot more of a pure, you know, Messi, but Zidane, I think it just adds to his legacy and adds to the story, quite frankly. I know it's not great, and I wouldn't want my kid doing that on a football pitch, right? But it's,
you're right, it's part
it
of the legend.
It adds to it, doesn't it?
Legends aren't always good things. Part of the legend, the myth, the man, the myth, the legend.
Do you know who will go down as another legend of this tournament? It's Fabio Grosso. Because two huge, huge, huge kicks of a football from that left back, I tell you. Yeah, I don't think many people would remember that name in about 20 years' time, but wow, what a tournament for him.
Jack, we're going to put you on, not quite on the spot, but we're going to fire our World Cup questions at you now. So, We'll go through the list. I think you did allude to an unbelievable one earlier, but there might have been some others that made the shortlist. What are your any famous favourite goals that stand out across the tournament?
I mean, it's hard to look past that Esteban Cambiaso one. That was, I've had many a debate in the pub with a friend about this. That passing move was better than anything Spain did under their tiki-taka, just that era they had. I mean, it was passing, it was keep ball, but it was so direct. It was just, it was perfect. And the back heel just prior, like with the assist, was incredible.
Well, I was going to say, just to one this favourite goal topic, is that a lot of people look back at that Carlos Alberto goal, don't they, in 1970 final, right? And it's in a final, it's Brazil. And Tom and I have spoken about that goal on previous podcasts. You know, it is a lovely goal, but this doesn't stand up to this one. I mean, if you compare the two, this is far better. I mean, and it's in a group game against Serbia, and they win 6-0, and that's why.
Yeah. But you're right. It's the incision. It's the directness of it. It's not what makes the Brazil 70s almost so mystical is that it's done at such a one slow pace, and then it's obviously just wrapped with the Carlos Alberto finish. But it's almost walked in, isn't it? Whereas actually, this is a slick move, as well as a team goal. And it's just classy. It's just a quality goal. And actually, it's not necessarily a goal that often you see in a international kind of game. The tournament, the goals that normally stand out at international level, especially World Cups, are your bangers, your 25, 30 yards, top bins kind of goals. You know, but that sort of almost team, like club level team understanding, you know, it was that level, like it almost looks like it's been drilled on the training pitches for months and months and months, when it couldn't have been because it's international football, which is nice for me. You can't really look past that. But for either of you, any other goals stand out?
The opening match, Torsten Frings scored some incredible one. I think it was a free kick. It was just knocked along to him, and he just, maybe 30, 35 yards out, just absolutely cannons it into the top corner.
That was quite early on in the tournament. Was it the first game? Wasn't it?
That was the opening game, yeah.
I've probably got a couple of ones that stand out. I think that are very unlucky losers in this category, because I would agree with Jack's pick. You know, I've waited so long to mention Raquel May's name in this podcast, but I'm going to mention it now because he's at the centre of that goal. Two other strikes, Maxi Rodriguez against Mexico. Absolutely phenomenal volley.
Was that one in extra time?
Yeah, it's like a long ball up top. Chest left foot volley. And he's a right-footed player as well. It's just absolutely disgraceful strike. And maybe Rosicki scores a really brilliant goal against America in the group stages as well.
I don't remember
top corner. I watched that earlier just and it came up in a little montage.
Nice.
And he's an Arsenal player, so.
Any particular games, and doesn't necessarily have to be towards the end of the tournament, any particular big games stand out as your favourites looking back on to watch, Jack?
I feel both ones that we mentioned earlier, obviously the Spain-France where Zidane just put in the performance of the century. The semi-final that we mentioned, Germany-Italy. One more that I would mention, I think it was Australia-Croatia in the group games. I think it was Australia's first time back in the World Cup since probably the 80s, maybe even further back. I think it was a 3-2. They got their win. There was just all sorts happening. It was goals. It was red cards. It was just...
Tim Cahill.
Yeah, it was just pandemonium. And it was great because it was years that Australia had been knocking at the door, getting to the final round of qualification and being knocked away. And
they sneak out of the group, don't they, Australia as well, I think, you know, like...
Well, that's the interesting thing because they play Italy in the next rounds, and Italy, the eventual champions, takes a 90th minute dive to get a penalty to beat Australia. Who knows if that game goes to extra time, then...
Yeah, it's one of those things that, you know, in a drab kind of tight affair, could easily get over the line. And like you said, Tim Cahill, I think the Duke was still knocking about. So, like, you're good to, solid team, Australia there, solid team.
Yeah, that dive rings a bell now. I'm starting to recall that. Yeah, really, that's a disgraceful decision. And Totti puts it away, I think.
I think it was Totti that does the dive as well. I might be doing him a disservice there, but it was just, it was one of those ones, you learn it from Sunday League football growing up, it's don't give the referee a decision to make, and the guy slides him in the box.
That's given me another idea for a podcast, Tom, like top 10 overrated players of all time.
Yeah, or controversial moments, but overrated players. Yeah, Totti be well up there.
Sorry, Roma fans listening, sorry.
So would Pirlo. I'm not having this, man. My personal opinion, Jack, is that is Pirlo hype. Pirlo was a very good footballer, yeah. And I know he's a linchpin of this sort of clearly, but anyway, I think he's just overrated. He's looked at as one of the best midfielders ever. I'm just not having that. He's a very, very good footballer. That's about it. What we like to look at is a bit more fun stuff as well. Does anyone remember any kits that they loved here? Favorite kit?
We're out of the 90s. I'm struggling here.
Yeah, there's ones that I love. That France away one, the white top, they're just...
I was about to say, for France, for about three or four tournaments in a row, their away kit was always white each time, but it was always beautiful. 2002 one was beautiful, I know they needed to wear it, and even the 98 one was beautiful, the French were white. Yeah, that was lovely. I quite like the Mexico kit, we just referred to the game where Argentina won. But
I think we're sort of approaching the era of the Italian players looking like Hugo Boss models, aren't they now? So the Italian kit was a nice one, I think. I remember quite clean.
Yeah, Argentina, both home and away, just home, nice and classic, what you like. Away, that was dark.
Was it a darker blue one? Yeah, the dark, like the black shorts. Yeah, that was a really nice kit, actually, with the dark blue. I really like that one.
England's kits were naff in this tournament.
Oh, it's just such a template job. It was really disappointing.
Yeah, they do go try and template, but for me, that works. Any other questions you want to fire, Andrew?
Let's go for, this is a hard one, actually. Best celebration.
Is there an iconic celebration from this World Cup?
I mean, mine would be Grosso's against Germany.
Yeah, that was a good one. I quite like the Fernando Torres. Never really got far in the tournament, but it was just knee slayed the archer thing. Yeah, that was always fun. A couple of African dances. I think Ivory Coast put on a few good ones.
Togo did one though.
Yes, the hopper.
Oh, I didn't remember that actually. Yeah.
Adebayor leading the way with a little rabbit.
Adebayor wearing number 4, was it as well?
Yeah.
That was horrifying.
I'm also just looking up the World Cup ball that was used.
Oh, that was stunning football. Teamgeist, I think. Teamgeist.
Yeah, Teamgeist. Yeah, that was a nice football. Further than over, the 2002 World Cup ball is my favourite ball of all time. But yeah, this was a good one, to be fair. Again, I feel they go a bit generic these days, and it just doesn't, I don't know. I just like, maybe I'm just a nostalgia merchant, but I just love, the 2002 ball. But this is a nice, good, the team guys, that's nice. That's a nice football.
We have put a question down, actually, Tom, which I think probably this is, when I was typing this up, I was thinking, are we now entering the era where haircuts and things like that are just quite, I mean, in the 90s World Cups, you could say, oh, who had the craziest haircut? Whereas I think we're in a sort of a generation society now
boring.
Where...
Well, it's also just getting very boring. Yeah. Everyone's doing this, doing the same thing. The kits become very more template as well. I don't think you necessarily had an outrageous kit so much. I basically feel the 90s was just special for outrageousness.
There's one haircut in this tournament. I think it was called Loco. It was an Angolan fella who... It's like he was emulating the Ronaldo 2002, but with some kind of dreadlock type thing. It basically looked like a spider in his forehead. That's about as mad as I can think of.
Well, there you go.
Torres's mullet, I think, was sort of emerging, wasn't it?
That was something else.
Yeah. That came back in a big way. Obviously, Italy go on and claim the World Cup win, the third or fourth in their history. We're going to move on to South Africa, who I believe nearly got this World Cup in the voting round. They nearly got this one, which is why they're gone next time. But that's been an absolute pleasure, Jack. Thank you for joining us for a trip down memory lane on the 2006 World Cup. I can only hope and presume that your choosing of teams has got better in the years to come, so you don't keep picking a favourite team that gets knocked out.
I don't think I've ever once watched a World Cup final where the team I wanted to win ended up winning. So who knows? Maybe 2022 is the one.
If England get there, please cheer on the opposition, which you probably will be anyway. I don't know. But
this is the only ever World Cup, I think. We're on the road to 2022 Qatar, and this is the only ever World Cup where my interest is diminishing as it gets closer.
I am the exact same. I just don't care.
Yeah.
I want to.
We've done a series about it.
Well, we've done a series reviewing every other World Cup as opposed to this one, to be fair. Although we're on the road to Qatar 2022, what we're doing is celebrating the glory that was the FIFA World Cup in anticipation of the flop.
It's the journey, isn't it? Not the destination.
Absolutely. But you're right. And it will be interesting to see. Maybe our only hope is that the football is so brilliant that it distracts from the fact that it A, shouldn't be happening because of where it is, but B, is in the middle of the season for European football fans, which just doesn't make real, which I think just stops you getting excited and looking forward to it. But hopefully you'll look forward to listening to that pod that's just happened and the 2010, 14 and 18 reviews to come. So Jack, it's been a pleasure. Andrew, as ever, keep listening at HTO Football, all your podcast platforms, Spotify, Apple, wherever you like to listen, and we will speak to you soon.